WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
It's Friday, and boy, do we have news for you. Time to catch up on what's been happening lately across Chicago and Illinois in our weekly news recap, where we take you behind the headlines with local journalists working on stories like these.
I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I'm grateful to be here to deliver my 7th State of the State and budget address.
Governor J.B. Pritzker is making news today as he lays out what he wants in next year's budget.
State-funded health care could end for thousands of immigrants without legal status.
That was a positive move because our focus ought to be on taking care of our own families.
Today, Governor Pritzker went way too far.
The governor used his State of the State and budget address today to compare the current direction of the federal government to Nazi Germany.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Lots to dive into, and I cannot do it alone. So to explore the headlines of the past week and much more, we had Jacoby Cochran, host of CityCast Chicago, a daily podcast and newsletter. Ray Long, Chicago Tribune investigative reporter, and also the author of The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. And to round it out, we had Alex Degman, State House reporter for WBEZ. We started with what to know about Governor Pritzker's State of the State address. The speech was filled with warnings about the Trump administration and critique around how federal budget cuts were impacting Illinois. Alex kicked us off.
Well, he gave a lot of examples of just a lot of things about the budget and just really trying to connect what's going on now in the country with what happened in basically 1930s Germany. And I was kind of struck because with the State of the State and budget address, it's usually not that pointed, especially against the feds. But this time it really was because J.B. Pritzker, as he made it clear through his remarks, he has a pretty vested interest in this.
Yeah.
As a Democrat Jewish man who helped build the Illinois Holocaust Museum, he's very attuned to this. And I don't know if we want to talk about the those connections first or the state budget, because he did talk about both of those things.
Yeah, I mean, let's go with you brought us to Nazi Germany. let's hear him actually say his words.
Acting and sounding the alarm too soon, consider this. It took the Nazis 1 month, 3 weeks, 2 days, 8 hours, and 40 minutes to dismantle a constitutional republic. And all I'm saying is that when the five-alarm fire starts to burn, every good person better be ready to man a post with a bucket of water if you want to stop it from raging out of control.
So let's talk more about that, Alex, and then I'll get Ray and Jacoby to weigh in.
So something else that he mentioned in that speech was a pretty telling quote, and he might have said it, but I'll reiterate it. He said, "The seed that grew into a dictatorship in Europe a lifetime ago did not arrive overnight. It started with everyday Germans mad about inflation and looking for someone to blame." And a lot of people thought that this was incendiary, but Governor Pritzker, even in the speech, he said, "You know what? No. It's not, because look at what's going on right now. You have planes falling out of the sky, and the President Trump is blaming Pete Buttigieg and his merry band of trans employees for planes falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
You have crime. What's going on with crime? Well, of course, it's the illegal immigrants, so let's send them to Guantanamo Bay. Like, these are the kinds of things that happened when they were looking for someone to blame and looking to gather all of this and basically gather themselves and put this forth. So he's really drawing parallels there.
Yeah, drawing a lot of parallels. You know, as I mentioned before, talking about the impact of all the federal budget cuts, what it's going to do to us here in Illinois. He's talking about things like cutting Meals on Wheels, cutting the Affordable Care Act could force rural hospitals to close. The fact that cutting off food safety inspectors at meat processing plants and the trickle down effect that that could have. What are your thoughts, Jacoby? I know that you watched that speech.
Yeah, while I continue to appreciate Governor Pritzker calling the Trump administration's chaotic overhaul of the federal government fascist in nature, I do want to caution people from using this as their only frame of reference. Because when we talk about the protections that are being rolled back, remember, we had to put these protections in place because transgender people were being discriminated in America, because Black people were being denied homes, employment opportunities in America, equal opportunity to education in America. This is a country founded on genocide, displacement, and enslavement. And so when we constantly look towards Nazi Germany as our example of the worst this country can become, I think it in some ways tries to play into the American imagination of always moving towards the moral arc of justice. And it is this very country that has been unsafe for very many of the people that the Trump administration is going out of, people here under different governmental protection statuses, people here as members of the LGBTQ community, the poorest among us. And so we already live in a country under a democracy that hasn't held up the most amount of protections. And so I don't want all of these rollbacks, this toxic, very violent rhetoric to somehow play into this narrative that, oh, we have never seen this before, or this is the worst we are. This is a part of the fabric of this country.
Ray, we're going to listen to some of the opposition, then I want to get your take on the back end. So first up, this is how State Senator Chapin Rose of Central Illinois' 51st District responded.
This is a state budget address. We're here to deal with Illinois issues. And to take it off the rails at the end there the way he did, I mean, absolutely ridiculous.
And this is Deputy Republican Senate Leader Sue Rezin, who had similar criticism for Pritzker.
This was a very political budget speech. Clearly, the governor is beginning his run for the presidential race.
So what do you think here? Did the governor go too far? And what do you think of State Senator Rezin's comments there? Are there increasing signs that Pritzker is probably going to run for president at some point?
Yeah, I mean, he's getting as close as you can to saying, hey, I'm going to take on the run for president here. He is really kind of in a juggling position there. He has to take on Trump to a certain extent to strengthen his base. Mm-hmm. And he has to also take on Trump because Trump is a threat to the state of Illinois and the funding coming in. But by taking on Trump, he also could be inviting more of rage from Trump, too, who may target Illinois as a result of that. So it's a difficult balance, but I think he's chosen that, hey, it's time to stand up. And he is going to do that against Trump, and he's made a variety of rollbacks and cuts, including in health care for immigrants. And those are things that, for example, is something that he gets praise from Republicans, but from progressives, he gets condemnation. So he's got an unusual budget because he doesn't have a lot of money coming in. He had to start with he was talking $3 billion. Now he's saying he's been able to close it to what, Alex, 1.7 to trying to close the gap.
Roughly a billion.
Roughly a billion. Yeah. They found
$2 billion here,
somewhere.
$100 million
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Like that.
Pretty soon you're talking real money, right?
Yeah. Right.
Quote Everett Dirksen. So this whole thing here is more of a look at the national stage, but you got to also wonder about what's happening in Illinois, and he's got to do that, and he still has to increase his bona fides and buttress those there. And you know, he talked about, well, we could on the local level maybe do some consolidation on townships for pulling in property tax, but he hasn't taken on, for example, the weak ethical laws that we have in Illinois that, you know, are the kinds of laws that allow people to get elected that help make the laws that we all stand or fall on.
Yeah, ethics reform was something that we were looking for in the speech, but didn't quite get that. Pritzker said, Alex, at one point, he said, you know, trying to get along with President Trump, that's not going to help the situation. He referred to a time in the pandemic when he praised the president for his efforts. Mm-hmm. How did he say that turned out for us?
Not well. He went on and he praised President Trump for, you know, sending ventilators and personal protective equipment, mm-hmm. but the president in 2020 sent the wrong stuff. So Pritzker is basically like, you know what? There's not very much working with this administration. So in a way, he's kind of, to get back to the point that we're kind of hinting at around here, his ambitions beyond the governorship. You know, this is just another example of that. This is an example of him just like coming to the table and just not really beating around the bush like he usually does. Because he even mentioned like his ambitions in the speech. This has nothing to do with my ambitions. Well, oh, okay. So it's interesting.
Between the lines we had to read.
Alex and I were talking ahead of time here with Jacoby, and Alex was noting that was the first time he'd said ambitions and made it as clear as he ever has that he's going to try to go for the big stage.
The biggest hint possible. He came out swinging at the White House, though, you know, he called the president and Elon Musk idiots. Should we be worried, Jacoby, that they might seek revenge against Illinois somehow?
Yeah, 100%. I think they've already started. I think the fact that at one point his Borders Are All Tom Homan was here in Chicago giving off his speeches and his warning calls that they were going a sort of full regalia in the city. We've already seen that Chicago and Illinois is on his crosshair. So I honestly don't think there's anything that he can do.
No new targets on our backs.
I was just going to say, I don't think there's anything Governor Pritzker can do in softening his rhetoric that will take the target off of Illinois' back. And so I think for his own personal profile, sort of leaning in into his attacks is his go-to strategy. But I do think you risk people missing the nuance of how this takeover is impacting us on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. So I want to dive into the financial details a bit more, Alex. Governor Pritzker's $55 billion budget does not include tax increases. So overall, how are our finances looking?
Well, that always depends on who you ask. But on paper, this is a balanced budget heading into the next fiscal year. I think we've got about $55.4 billion in revenue coming in, $55.2 billion going out. That's a surplus of about $218 million. They're going to be able to pay down the debt that they're carrying over from this year. And you're right, there's not an increase to the corporate tax, the income tax, or anything like that. But as we mentioned a little bit before, there is still this $1.2, $1.3, $1.4 billion gap that they have to fill.
Yeah.
But that was originally going to be $3.2. So they found some money.
Right. Things are looking up.
What a surprise.
Things are looking up.
I was going to say, I don't know if that was Jacoby or Ray that laughed. But
It was both.
But yeah, the governor's office came out with a much rosier estimate for revenue, bolstered in part by increased income and corporate sales taxes. So they still have to find a little bit. So they're going to do things like changing the tax structure for casinos. They're going to delay some money that's supposed to go into the road fund from sales taxes. That's going to go into the general revenue fund instead. So stuff like that, like little tit for tat stuff, like to plug a hole here, plug a hole there. But the problem is that some budget experts think that this is not the way to budget long term, because Illinois has had a structural deficit for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And the level of service that the state provides cannot be sustained with its current structure. Yeah. So basically, some budget experts say you just need to live within your means, but then some other budget experts say, you know, Illinois can't afford the means that it's put in place.
Right.
So,
right. And this budget speech, that's just a starting point, right, Alex?
Right.
I mean, it's not necessarily what the final budget's going to look like.
This is not the final budget, and I don't think that this will be the final budget, because there are some pretty, I won't say controversial things, but there are tough things. We mentioned the end of the health care benefits for immigrant adults program. People in the U.S. without legal status younger than 64, they're going to get kicked off health insurance. And that is making a lot of people upset. So that's going to be a big sticking point. That's going to be a big part of the negotiations.
When does the budget need to be passed by?
They like to do it by the end of May, because once you get into June, it takes more votes to pass anything. But the fiscal year starts July 1.
I see. So the governor also unveiled a series of policy proposals not tied to the budget. So sticking with, talking about education, Pritzker said that he wants to ban cell phones in classrooms. And I'm looking at you, Jacoby, because I wonder if you could see the legislature actually approving something like that.
I actually do think I can see them approving.
There's been a lot of chatter.
Something like that. There are already other states with similar laws on the books. I also think suburban parents have a lot of power when it talks about things that they're going to pressure their lawmakers in getting to the governor's desk. I don't know if this is the best effort for a number of reasons. One, because I think the ban, in some ways, though it highlights a number of different pilots and avenues different school districts have taken, it says that the state needs to step in to solve this problem, and in some ways says that it almost pretends as if school districts allow students to have cell phones in the class now.
Right.
I've worked with children from age 12 to 22, from elementary school to universities, and no syllabus encourages people to use their cell phone in class.
There's never a line that says, pull out your phone at any chance you get. No, I've got two teens. They absolutely are not allowed
exactly.
to. As much as I want to text them and you know, tell them different random things, or, you know, I can't. Or they don't answer me right away because they can't use them.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that cell phones are 1,000 times more distracting now than they have ever been. But when has an outright ban of something been the way to go about it? I also am reading Dr. Eve Ewing's book, Original Sin. And it talks about the different relationships schools take to white students versus black students versus native students. And we talk about a ban that the state is hoping that all school districts come up with a plan by 2026, 2027 to sort of outright ban cell phones and wireless devices. That means that in some way we're inviting potential police, we're inviting more suspension, more expulsion, because having a ban like this means that you can authorize more penalties.
Correct.
And when penalties and enforcement is involved, it disproportionately impacts Native children, black and brown children. And so I agree that cell phones need to be wrangled in, but I also think, and I know some teachers are listening and said, I've tried everything. Kobe, I'm a teacher too. We need to be more creative.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is here. Kids didn't sit themselves in front of the TV at 3 years old, in front of a tablet, handed their parents' cell phone. It's not like they made themselves addicted to this technology. Corporations invested a lot of money to figure out how to get us to not turn away. How many people are listening to this right now, not doing their job fully because they're on their phone,
and
on their technology, listening to us? And so
I see you.
We don't see young people as fully autonomous. We see them as things needing to be obedient. Mm-hmm. And so this ban doesn't provide enough nuance to why technology is so omnipresent in their lives.
Yeah. I want to be clear here, Alice, that if, as Jacoby said, it is going to be largely up to each district to implement something like this, would this legislation, if passed, actually have any real power anyway?
It would. And I think it would, in the sense that my idea of the legislation would be that it would empower the Illinois Department of Education to set their own rules. And it would basically be an agency rule setting thing. So, yeah, districts would be able to implement the policy as they see fit. And there wouldn't be any kind of a state standard, because each district is different and it would have to be implemented differently.
Yeah.
I just have a piece of history that's interesting to throw into this, because Mary Flowers, years ago, like the late 80s or early 90s, put in place a ban. And then a few years later, after Columbine, she said, well, okay, maybe we need to have kids having access to their telephones. So she put in a repeal of her own ban. And now we're going back to talking about a ban that each district can tailor to their own needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of a circular motion on this whole issue.
So much more we can touch on from the speech here. Pritzker pitched legislation that would create new rules around cryptocurrency ATM machines. Got to be honest, I had no idea there was such a thing, Ray. Are you a regular user of crypto ATMs?
No, I don't. In fact, I don't even.
You look like a guy that uses crypto ATMs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you about that on the side later. But, you know, the reality is I don't even use electronic banking. I figure there's too many chances of people in, you know.
Oh, so you go into the teller.
Yeah, I go into the teller or I go to the ATM.
Fascinating.
But, you know, I don't do it online. So, you know, there's different levels of it out there.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
how about you, Jacoby? Are you crypto ATMing?
I do not use the crypto ATM, but I do know in the land of the scammers and the finessers that people have found a way to use them for fraud, for money laundering, you know, and a lot of kind of old school scams have been funneled into this new technology, tricking people into thinking you're a member of a government agency that they owe money to, that they're your potential romantic partner, that you're some prince from some, you know, off-begotten land who needs money. And so it's just, again, I think it is similar to the phones. I understand it's an attempt to curtail a leak, but it isn't just putting a bucket under the leak. Fraud, scam, financial crimes are a huge issue. And if we're just sort of plugging every hole when it pops up, we're maybe not getting towards the root issue.
So on the same day that the governor was outlining the state's financial situation, Chicago Alders were grappling with taking on an additional $830 million in debt. So, Ray, tell us about their decision to ultimately defer this matter.
Well, they are looking at the structure of it because it would cost, over the course of several years, many years, $2 billion overall to pay for it. So they're questioning whether this is the right structure, this is the right amount. Mm-hmm. They all agree that there are capital projects that should be done just to keep up the general structure, infrastructure in Chicago. But they have lost faith in this administration. They have lost faith on how he's going to use the money, and they've lost faith on how much direction he has in an overall plan, because it seems to be sometimes that he makes his plans based on, you know, the seat of his pants, sometimes based on criticism, or sometimes he doesn't have a plan when he comes out with all this. So they've loaded up a lot of their fire and brimstone and pushed this over to the side. Mm-hmm. One alderman tried to put it in his committee, and another alderman, and he failed, and then another alderman was able to delay the vote. So it's still out there bubbling, but they couldn't pull it off this week.
Yeah. The city council also voted against lowering the speed limit. Jacoby, just map out that debate for us. What are supporters saying and opponents arguing?
Yeah, they voted 28-21 to go against lowering the speed limit from 30 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour. And essentially you have CAMS broken into two sides. On one side you have advocates, people who push for more bike lanes, more public transit support, who are saying by lowering the speed limit just 5 miles per hour, you can save a ton of lives. Traffic accidents in this city for pedestrians, for cyclists are something that we still want to work every single day to lower year on year. And advocates say that by reducing the speed limit, we could, in fact, do that.
Yeah.
But then you have Alders who also say that, you know, a disproportionate amount of the city's speed cameras are in black and brown neighborhoods on the south and west sides, that the disproportionate amount of tickets are going to go to those individuals, and largely people who can't keep up with a rise in fines. And so I'm always split here because I agree. The city increasing its revenue on, you know, fines and fees is something we see administration over administration, and I don't necessarily think it works. On a personal level, I am someone who tends to get a lot of speed tickets, both when I see the flash mm-hmm. and I don't see the camera. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I do think we do need to be taking a citywide approach to how do we lower traffic fatalities?
Yeah.
How do we improve cycling infrastructure? But again, I think this needs to be a broader infrastructure conversation and not just let's penalize people into changing their behavior.
Yeah. That,
I understand it's a short-term like solution, but it isn't necessarily the most effective way long-term.
Right one. Yeah. You've been looking into corruption around red light cameras, Ray.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, just as Governor Pritzker was talking in Springfield about the things they should do, we had more developments appear in federal court briefs this week in the case of a sitting senator, Emil Jones III. He's the son of former President Emil Jones Jr. And Emil Jones III is accused of taking a $5,000 bribe and also lying to the feds. And he is, you know, the latest in a string of lawmakers who have gone into federal court and either pleaded guilty, been found guilty, or have cases pending. And they're at the heart of Emil Jones' case is what you were talking about, the red light cameras. And he was offered this bribe by a guy who had worked for a red light company and had been working with the FBI. So they got him on tape saying, what do you need? And, or what would you want? And he says, well, you could raise $5,000 for me. And, you know, so that is one of those that seems like you could argue it pretty hard that he's crossed the line.
Interesting. Union workers braved the bitter cold on Monday. They were marching from Federal Plaza in the Loop to Trump Tower to protest mass layoffs. So, Ray, tell us what's been happening to federal employees here.
There's a chainsaw going through departments throughout the United States, and the federal workers had enough. Unfortunately, they picked one of the coldest days of the year to go out and protest, but they still drew 100 or more out there in front of on the Federal Plaza downtown. And so what we've seen here are people getting emails that they had no idea their jobs were in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. One person at the Federal Plaza was talking about how she had just taken a job like in November.
Because a lot of these employees are they're probation. On probationary status, right? They had just taken a promotion of some kind.
I didn't mean to interrupt. But the Elon Musk and Trump administration, if you want to call it that together, they're just going after anybody they can. And the probationary employees are the easiest. There's hundreds of thousands of them. And they're also cutting out departments with, like I said, a chainsaw approach. Mm-hmm. Now, who can argue that you shouldn't be looking for waste and cutting out positions and bad spending and all that kind of stuff, but let's at least identify it and talk about it before you go in there and cut it.
Yeah, well, you know, Trump's firings have left EPA's Chicago office down dozens of scientists and staff. We were looking at just the numbers statewide. It's roughly 82,000 federal workers that we have here in Illinois. That's according to the latest numbers from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. But here's the thing. Those Chicago workers, as we said, they joined federal employees all across the country who were sort of doing the same thing on President's Day. Since Monday, though, Ray, I hear some of these workers who were laid off have actually been rehired.
Yeah, some of them have been rehired. And in some cases, they've had to try to find them because they shut everything off in their contact.
Goodness.
Because when they fired them, they sent them an email and then closed down.
Cut them off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a circus. You don't want to find out what services you need by killing all the jobs and then finding out you've got gaps later. It's not the way to run a government.
Alex, Illinois' senators and congressional delegation have also been sounding the alarm about the president's budget cuts. What are they saying?
Yeah, I think they also held a rally this week. There were a lot of people outside the AIDS Foundation in Chicago, a pretty good size chunk of Illinois' Democratic congressional delegation, plus Dick Durbin. And you had a lot of people taking the microphone and basically just speaking what they thought. And this is what you've heard a lot of people on the left say they want to hear more from Democrats. You had people like Congresswoman Lauren Underwood saying that Trump and Elon Musk are basically sticking a middle finger up to the American people. Mike Quigley is bringing up something that a lot of people are thinking. You know, Elon Musk and Doge are trying to investigate all of these federal agencies that have oversight of some of his companies like Tesla, SpaceX. Is that not a conflict of interest? Can we do something about that? And then you also had leaders of political leaders of unions. You had people with groups like Citizen Action Illinois saying that they're going to take action by, you know, actually going around to some of these conservative districts in the state and holding town halls and getting people to realize these are your constituents. This is what they're talking about,
right.
Which is, you know, that's not too dissimilar to what you're seeing some of on the federal level. You might have heard about Bernie Sanders holding similar town hall meetings in conservative districts in Iowa that could swing Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of a national effort to just really keep the pressure on. So there were there were those protests. There were also 50-51 protests on Monday. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff. And we should also mention universities are also sounding the alarms about how federal budget cuts could impact them. UIC faculty actually gathered as well to protest proposed cuts to federal research. Now, union workers weren't the only ones protesting this week, believe it or not. Some people were upset that House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries was in Chicago last night at a WBEZ event where he was promoting his book. They protested outside Michigan Avenue's Fine Arts Building where he was speaking. What do we want? Leadership. When do we want it? Now. So, Jacoby, here's my question. Chicagoans, clearly they're not letting the cold stop them from telling politicians how they feel right now. Do you think that Washington's ears are open to hearing them, both Republicans and Democrats?
Hell no. I'm sorry to say it that way. But no, I think this blitz strategy from the Trump administration is doing exactly what it's intended to do, to overwhelm courts, to overwhelm advocacy groups, to overwhelm the American public, to overwhelm federal workers. Like when you're constantly reading stories about wildfires and then see FEMA cut, when you're reading stories about plane accidents and FAA cuts, right? It's meant to create this sense of panic inside of you. And unfortunately, I do think a lot of Democratic leaders, is the reason I was very, in some ways, critical of the governor, is I think, like, easy narrative telling, like, oh, they are the boogeyman, they mm-hmm. are Nazis, they are, I don't think it does the job of truly informing people in the different ways that their civil liberties are under assault, the different ways that our state and city protections don't actually protect us in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see a place like Lurie's Children's Hospital saying, hey, we have to shut down some of our care for transgender youth because we're afraid of funding,
right,
while simultaneously being one of the oldest institutions to provide this type of care, I think it has everyone on edge, everyone on panic. And even if they were interested, I don't think Washington, the pipeline of our protests and our anger, is being funneled up to leadership.
Yeah. They can't hear us. So while Democrats are criticizing Trump's budget cuts, Illinois Republicans are proposing a statewide version of DOGE, which is Elon Musk's entity working on government efficiency. What is that about, Alex?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
They want, like, an Illinois DOGE?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it is. State Representative John Cabello, a Rockford Republican, said he got the idea from Elon Musk. Sometimes you have to borrow a good idea.
What's the likelihood of this actually happening?
You know how Illinois Democrats feel about DOGE. Illinois Democrats control all of the committees at the State House. I would say it's not going anywhere, but I've been wrong before.
Mm.
It gets back to this whole idea that everybody agrees that there ought to be cuts of waste if you can find waste. But, you know, if you can't do it with a chainsaw.
This is not the way.
But I also think even by introducing a radical idea like DOGE, something that is running rampant, it is normalizing the idea that we need to be talking more about fiscal cuts, not progressive spending attempts, not attempts at big changing bills or sweeping legislation. When you have Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker both having to deal with budget cuts, it is softening our language around strapping the coffin doors closed, being more fiscally responsible. And now we're having a conversation about what's the right type of cuts. Where can we find waste? Mm. And so I do think it's still normalizing a problematic conversation around, like, budget cuts and budget waste at a time when we need our leaders to be taking some really big swings.
Right. Yeah. One prominent Democrat who renewed his call for Illinois to get a, quote, top to bottom government overhaul. That's former Governor Pat Quinn. Right. What's he up to? Right?
Well, that's he's talking about the corruption issue. And he's talking about it. Look, 16 years ago, Blagojevich was impeached. And Quinn came in as a lieutenant governor. He had risen up to governor when Blagojevich was impeached and tossed. And the first day Quinn took office, he set up something called an Illinois Reform Commission that included people like Patrick Collins, the guy who had prosecuted George Ryan, a governor who had gone to prison. And they put together an 88-page report in 100 days, and they offered up a variety of ideas. Some of them were accepted. A lot of them were not. And a lot of them, Quinn blames Madigan for blocking things like wiretapping, for example. Illinois actually has a law that bans wiretapping of public corruption issues. But if you just got out of the federal courthouse, like I did, you would find out that wiretaps were a large part of the prosecution of former House Speaker Michael Madigan. Mm-hmm. So some of these laws are protective of lawmakers because they don't want to have government snooping at different levels on them. But there is a variety of other laws, too, that would plug loopholes and escape hatches that are in campaign finance laws and a variety of others. The legislative inspector general, one of them quit because she said the law is so riddled with loopholes that it's a paper tiger. So that's what Quinn is saying. He is saying that Pritzker should set up a new Illinois Reform Commission so that they could come back now. And he's saying, well, Madigan's gone, and he accuses him of being the roadblock, and he was. He was an impediment in many cases. But
he had a quick mention in his speech about Madigan.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, applauding the guilty verdict, but wants to see federal courts stand up against Trump, too.
But that goes back to the issue that it's the federal courts that are having to do the policing of Illinois politicians.
Yeah.
And so,
and you wrote about this week, right, about how it's just becoming more difficult for prosecutors to win federal corruption cases.
Right. It's also a case where the U.S. Supreme Court has basically split the bribery statute in two. We saw that case come out of Portage, Indiana, where the mayor gave a $1 million contract with very finely tuned details of what they wanted, and this company was the one that fit the contract's specifications. And then we end up a few weeks later, that mayor is getting a $13,000 consulting contract. He was convicted of bribery. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court. They said, you know, it was after the fact, so it doesn't really count.
None of this surprises me anymore. Jacoby, we got the largest ever development project for Chicago's West Side. It's cleared yet another hurdle. Mm-hmm. So get us up to speed on the latest plans for that area just around United Center.
Yeah, some of the owners and investors behind the Bulls, the Hawks, and others want to reimagine the surrounding area around the United Center with a $7 billion transformation. It would take, if everything went perfectly, which no mega development in the last couple of decades has gone perfect. if things went well, it would add hotels, new residential units, 6,000-seat music venue, more public space, kind of take out a lot of the parking that sits around the United Center, similar to the White Sox, similar to Sox Park. There's just so much unused parking space when the games aren't happening or when an event is not happening. So they're trying to reimagine what takes place around there. I am a sucker for a good mock-up. You show me what the vision is
the
for a plot
gotcha.
Of land. But like with any mega development project that is also happening in a residential neighborhood, my thoughts are always, how does this involve the community? How does it make sure we're protecting long-term residents from being pushed out? I mean, the United Center, since it opened up in the 90s, has gone through different waves of revitalization in the neighborhood or change in the neighborhood. But something like this could change the fabric of that area. And I think we saw around the DNC, like, this isn't just some, like,
open plot of land where no one lives.
That's
like,
right.
Anything taking place over there impacts hundreds and hundreds of residents. So I know there have been a lot of community listening sessions, but okay. I hope those aren't just like your sort of bare minimum.
Yeah, and they're thinking this project could be actually completed by about 2040. So we'll have plenty of recaps to discuss right. this over and over again. I want to move over to Soldier Field. The Bears announced a 10% ticket price increase for next year. Yay. So given what a great season they had, Ray, I bet you're not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. In fact, I hope there's more than a 10% increase in wins this year.
And I want to make sure folks know that was all sarcasm. Bears had 5 wins and 12 losses last season.
It was rough and rocky. And, Yikes. When even somebody like me can say, you know, before the season even started, we need a better offensive line. Come on. And then they find out they need a better offensive line. Then, you know, we hope that they can plug those holes.
People are
skeptical, but we still have Caleb and the gang of great wide receivers, and that gives us all hope. Yeah. A new coach, too, and a new staff.
That's right, new coach. So, Alex, as a fan, how do you think that 10% ticket increase goes over with the politicians in Springfield?
Well, I mean, it's probably not going to go over well, considering that there is a Democrat, Bob Morgan, who recently introduced, I think it's called the Bear Stadium Oversight Act, which would basically mean, hey, if you own a professional sports franchise and you want to ask us for public subsidies, you need to have at least a .500 record in 3 of the last 5 seasons.
So no new stadium anytime soon?
In the next decade.
If this passes.
For anybody.
If this
for
passes,
anybody.
I mean,
no new stadium for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it affects the White Sox, it affects the Bulls, it affects any professional sports team, the Red Stars, it affects anybody. So, yeah, if that passes, I don't know if it will, because they got a lot of other stuff to do. So, but yeah, I don't think they would like that.
We finally found out who the last person on Chicago's 21-person Board of Education is. Who is Sidney Wallace, Jacoby?
Yeah, Sidney Wallace is going to join the hybrid board in the 8th District alongside Andrew Gutierrez. This is actually my school board district. It stretches from the Loop through Chinatown, Bridgeport, Gage Park, and back of the Yards. She is a Black mom. She sits on the Jewish Council of Urban Affairs. She has kids who go to Chicago public schools. From everything I know, this choice is likely someone who sides with the mayor, who is more lockstep with his vision for Chicago public schools. I imagine not only because he wants to keep, you know, a good amount of influence over the board, but also Andrew Gutierrez has largely been painted as more of a pro-charter school candidate. And so I am wondering why it took so long, especially given he was running against Felix Ponce, who was someone who seemed more lock in step with the mayor's agenda. So I'm wondering why it took, weeks after everyone was sworn in. But we're here now.
Finally got a full team.
Because people got to go back to the voting booth for the school board in a couple
contract
of years.
Negotiations continue. So she's got plenty of work.
You know, she got to do right to work.
Right to work. Since you're here, Jacoby, I want to let you share the good news. I was trying to do it like you do it on CityCast. Can you do it?
Every episode of CityCast Chicago ends the same way with some good news.
Tell it, baby.
Yes.
In fact, in today's episode, we talked about Heartland Alliance Health, who at the beginning of the month announced that they were going to have to close down a clinic in Inglewood and Uptown and 3 pantries across the city. And on Wednesday, they told their staff that they got a multi-million dollar donation or grant to continue going forward.
Amazing.
Which I think is both great news for their 100-plus employees, the 8,000 Chicagoans that rely on them. But I do think it, again, speaks to the sort of neoliberal decay of public goods in our country. The fact that an organization that has roots back to the 1880s and was once a part of a social service behemoth has to hope that they get an infusion of millions of dollars to provide critical services to some of the most vulnerable Chicagoans. It's great news.
That is fantastic
but,
news.
You know, in the long term, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, what other good news might you have to share, Jacoby? Because, I mean, we need it.
Well, this month, I am celebrating 4 years at CityCast Chicago.
Congratulations!
Making one of the city's only daily podcasts and newsletters. And We are also coming up on 1,000 episodes. And so right now we're asking everybody to tell us one of the things they love about Chicago. I think we've got 860 plus things on our list. So it's been a pleasure to be here for the last 4 years doing this, to come sit down with you.
And we've enjoyed having you. Absolutely. Yeah. And you're going to have me on for your 1,000th episode, right? If you just haven't asked
yet.
If
we can make it work.
Your people are calling my people.
We love you, Sasha.
Oh, boy. Ray, let's take a moment here to reflect on soul singer and longtime Cook County board member Jerry Butler. He passed away last night at his home in Chicago.
It's really sad to hear. I mean, I covered Jerry back years ago when he was a commissioner in Cook County. And he was doing his job as a commissioner thing. And it made me think, you know, now Rhymefest is taking kind of the baton from him. He's now in the school circle, the school board. And but Jerry is somebody who, when I went up to him and called him Iceman, he'd light up, you know, because, you know, most people were asking him tough questions. I'd ask him tough questions, too, but nobody was calling him anything but commissioner.
You called him his nickname.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he was a R&B star, and he was a very big time in the
inductee in the Rock and Roll Hall.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, friend of
Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah, yeah, he really had done a lot and touched a lot of lives with his music, and he also did public service too. So he was always a Democratic vote. No matter what you had on the table, he would be there for the establishment. But you know, he had a record of public service and a public record for his records that he cut.
What a legacy. Rest in peace, Jerry Butler. Now, I've got just a few seconds. Quick rapid fire around the room before I let you go. Tell me what you're watching over the next week or so. Alex. Springfield.
What am I not watching in Springfield? But it's just going to be fun to start reading the budget, basically.
Yeah. Jacoby.
Oh, that's a very good one. I'm going to the Bulls game on Saturday, so I'm going to continue to watch them meander under 500.
I'm sorry.
And Ray. Yeah.
I'm just going to continue to follow the corruption and see what happens next.
We'll see where the corruption leads.
That's the most Ray Long answer.
What a wonderful way to end our weekly news recap. My thanks to Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, Jacoby Cochran of CityCast Chicago, and WBEZ's Alex Stegman. We're going to leave you with the sweet sounds of Jerry Butler. May he rest in peace. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman. It was edited by Maha Ahmed and mixed by Ari Mejia. Every Friday, we bring you the roundup of the biggest headlines of the week. So to stay informed and never miss an episode, subscribe wherever you listen. Or you can find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Take care, and thank you for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.